This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Even though it doesn't feel like it yet, fall officially arrived on Friday, and cooler weather is heading our way later in the week. Joining us to discuss cool weather gardens and to answer your gardening questions are Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles and Boone County Cooperative Extension Horticulture Agent David Kester. And joining us shortly will be co-owner of Home Meadow Song Farm and director of the Community Garden Program at Turner Farm, Peter Huttinger. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Sarah and David, good to see both of you today.
Thanks for being here. Thanks.
So, yeah, we're heading into fall. It doesn't really quite feel like it yet. It's been so hot and humid lately. But what should people be doing at this point, David, in terms of getting ready for fall gardening?
Oh, you know, I hate to start off with lawns, but it's a great time to be really taking a good hard look at your lawn, evaluating it and seeing if you want to do some reseeding, things like that. You still have plenty of time to do that. We, of course, been really the last couple of weeks, we've had ample rainfall all summer long, but it has dried out in the last couple of weeks, and we're pretty deficient in September. And so if you do something like that, or if you have new grass seedlings coming up, make sure that you're supplemental watering, because those just will not tolerate any kind of drought. That's the one exception we always say. When you've got new grass starting, water heavily or water frequently, but maybe not heavily, but keep it constantly moist. For everything else, we say water heavily, but infrequently.
See, I wouldn't have thought that fall is a good time for sowing grass seed.
Yeah, it's really the best time of year, secondary to the spring. But fall is a great time to really take a look, and if you need to work on it, this is a good time to do it. Yeah. Fertilization also comes up in October and November. We really, in Kentucky, recommend that you stick with fall-only fertilizer applications, and that's when you want to put on your heaviest nitrogen rates. And really, with our cool season grasses, this is when we really want to push them and make them grow.
Yeah. Sarah, what's your advice for fall gardeners?
Well, in addition to David's recommendations, getting your soil tested. If you're wanting to maybe add a garden, or if you've had some problems in vegetable garden, maybe some of your ornamental gardens, get your soil tested. And before adding fertilizer or before buying plants, because certain plants like azaleas, hydrangeas, hollies, compared to some other plants, they like more acidic soil. So naturally, a lot of Kentucky soils and in southern Ohio, we have more of alkaline soil. So we have to be very conscientious of what plants we plant. So choosing the right plant for the site, and if you need to make any, addition, adding nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium for anything, and lowering or changing that pH, you can do that with some sulfur if you need to. And then also, fall's a good time to plant trees. So,
really?
Yeah, that's a good time.
Kind of like grass.
I love fall planting of trees. Just make sure you get them in and you water them.
Yeah, and you don't want to fertilize them their first year. So just be mindful of that. Be a little patient. You know, when we plant, especially a nice size tree, like a 1.5 inch or up to an inch, you know, their roots are very tender. And so we're massaging them. We're getting them out into the world of the soil. And then they're a little aggravated a little bit, and we don't want to burn them with some nitrogen or anything like that. So we want to anchor those roots in their first year. And then the following fall, then that's when you want to add a little fertilizer.
So it's a good time for grass, trees. What about shrubs, bushes? Is that also a good time to do that?
Most all those things can be planted in the fall. And it's, a lot of people don't realize that by planting in the fall, you get that plant in. And in our part of the climate here, part of the geography, is that our ground stays unfrozen for most of the winter, and those roots will continue to grow as long as they're not in frozen ground. And those plants are much better able to withstand drought for the following summer if they've been put in the fall and they've got a root system start beginning to establish.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation about gardening, or you can send us an email, talk@wvxu.org. And Sarah, you were talking about getting your soil tested. What's a good way to do that?
So looking on our website, we do have directions. We actually have a YouTube video as well if you need further explanation. But for example, like for your lawn or your vegetable garden, an area where you may want to put in a tree, you need to go down a certain depth in your soil. For example, your lawn, you want to go down about 3 inches for getting recommendations for your turf. And then you want to go in, you know, 5 to 7 different places and collectively collect a cup to 2 cups of soil so that to represent one area. So, for example, like your front yard, I always recommend doing your front, back, and side differently. Especially in newer developments, because the front side, they tend to scrape all the good stuff, so you're left with rock. But in the back, maybe even more so, more rock, more backfill of clay and things like that. So, and your pH may be a little different, but if it's an established area, you can, as long as you've been treating it the same way, you can just collect different areas, go down that same depth of 2 to 3 inches, then dry out the soil. It's always recommended not to take it to your extension office when it's wet. So just let it air dry. Don't put it in an oven or anything. And then most offices in Kentucky offer free soil testing. So it takes about 2 weeks. The University of Kentucky.
Probably the same thing on the Ohio side too. The extension offices. I don't think so. Okay.
So for example, I know in Campbell County, for Campbell County residents, we offer free soil testing for residents. And every county's a little different in Kentucky. So just call the office, and you can also get, you know, other tests done as well, organic matter, heavy metal testing, things like that. But fall's a good time, especially in preps for your vegetable or any woody plants like shrubs, trees, all that kind of good stuff.
David, what are some good things to plant this time of year?
Well, I think it's a great time to take a look at your landscape. And I made a couple visits this morning and just saw some sites that really could have used some renovation and some work done around the landscape. And a lot of times, when a landscape is initiated maybe 10, 12 years ago, there wasn't much thought of how it would mature. And a lot of times these things get overgrown. And this is a great time to evaluate that, maybe make some changes, dig out some of the plants that you've had, and redo it. You know, your home is an incredibly big investment, and a well-landscaped yard can really enhance that economic return on it. So it's a really good time to do it, and I would take a look. And, you know, we are really lucky to have so many great nurseries and garden centers in this part of the country, and really Cincinnati and northern Kentucky, we're just loaded with them. And those people will be they're all professional. They belong to professional associations, and they can help you make selections.
Yeah, are there certain flowers that do well this time
sure.
of year?
Oh, sure. There's perennials that could go in now. A lot of course, mums, pansies, some of the kale, the ornamental kales can be planted. And, of course, we're coming up on a great time to add bulbs to your landscape. And I just don't think there's anything, it's that delayed satisfaction with the bulbs. You always, in spring, you wish you had done it.
You're getting ready for spring if you put bulbs in the ground.
Yeah, you wish, okay. When they're all in bloom in the spring, you go, why didn't I plant them this fall, that last fall? And you've got plenty of time to do that now.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you have any questions about gardening. And Sarah, what about vegetables? Where are some good vegetables to plant this time of year?
My daughter and I, we were just planting carrot seeds over the weekend. So I think fall is the best time to plant some of those root crops because they taste sweeter. I just harvested some radishes. So definitely any cool season crops like your kale, spinach, broccoli, cauliflower, all that loves this cool weather. Well, I guess we've had cool weather. I should be, if you step outside today.
We got a little sample a bit back, but it just turned the other way.
Yeah. And actually, I was thinking about ripping out some of my early tomatoes, but luckily I didn't because I've had maybe a dozen or so more fruit to ripen. So I'm pretty excited about that.
I have tomatoes out there in the garden right now that that I haven't had much of a harvest on, but they're just loaded with green fruit. And of course, these hot temperatures are just starting to ripen that fruit, and I should be in good shape until frost.
Yeah, Sarah, one of your favorite topics are pests.
Oh,
are there
yeah.
certain pests you need to be looking out for this time of year, certain insects?
Yeah. So when we're thinking about this time of year, it's always great to for your house plants that you have to bring indoors. There might be some little insects that are going to overwinter, maybe in the soil or maybe in the new growth. So just be mindful of that. I always give it a nice shower outside or maybe in my bathtub before I, transition them, for the winter months. And we still have pests. In fact, I was out in the garden this morning and you might see that little white moth fluttering around your cool season crops. Well, she's out there and she's laying her eggs on broccoli, kale, and she is the little worm that you see. That's the cabbage looper, and it's camouflage in with a lot of crops. But if you see some holes or chewing areas, that's the little larvae or that green caterpillar that is doing all that damage. So that's a major pest, and I'm still seeing a lot of aphids, which is my least favorite pest, on my tomatoes. So I'm still seeing that out and about.
Yeah. What do you do for aphids?
Oh, just I like insecticidal soap. I think that works pretty well. And just, they seem to be more favored in dry weather. So we are starting to pick up that a little bit. But the worms on the cabbage, the cauliflower, broccoli, all that stuff, those things have just really been heavy this fall. And the unfortunate thing about that insect, it takes on the same color as the thing that it's feeding on. And Mark, I've cut broccoli and we've soaked it and all those worms come up to the surface. And I'll tell you, it just doesn't make eating it nearly as enjoyable as it would be if they weren't on there. And of course, we've got a good insecticide for that, which is Dipel, which is completely safe.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. And we will continue that conversation and take your gardening questions after this. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining us to discuss cool weather gardens and to answer your gardening questions are Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles, co-owner of Hometo Song Farm and director of the Community Garden Program at Turner Farm, Peter Huttinger, and Boone County Cooperative Extension Horticulture Agent David Kester. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Peter, good to see you.
Good.
Thank you so much. Let's get your take on this too, because I've asked David and Sarah their thoughts on this, but as you go into the fall, what things should people be paying attention to with their gardens?
Well, I think you can do fall crops. I mean, it's getting a little late to put some of those in, but there's still a few things you could transplant. Just this morning, we did a broadcasted daikon, radish, and turnips for a crop at the Franciscan Community Garden. We're doing a project there with some of the Bhutanese families and Finneytown High School, a photojournalism class. And so we did that. Also, it's a time if you've got areas that you've pulled crops out, and you can also start doing your cover crops or your green manure crops to overwinter. And that's another thing you could be doing right now.
So it's a good time. It's an important time to clean up your summer garden, I guess, is
correct.
What you're saying.
Yeah. And also, like to mention, down at the East End Community Garden, Joshua Jones, the Turner Farm Community Garden Program garden manager, is teaching a free class on season extension. And so he'll be demonstrating how to use low tunnels primarily, and that's in the 200 block of Central Street in the East End. And if you go to turnerfarm.org or the Turner Farm Community Garden Program Facebook page, you can get information on that, or they can write me at peter@turnerfarm.org.
Okay. So I guess when it comes to the fall gardening, though, timing's everything, isn't it, Peter?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You have to time things back. What, to the first frost, first hard frost?
Usually, and you know, but Mark, what we always base all these recommendations that we give on averages, and this could be an out of average year. I mean, we may have good warm temperatures way into November, and I always say, you know, give it a chance. You know, seed some things, do some things, and if you're able to cover with, as Peter said, a row cover or something like that, you can really extend your harvest. I mean, there's no reason to give up gardening yet. I mean, there's a lot of things that can still be planted and you can still get harvest out. I mean, obviously your warm season crops are pretty much done, but you can continue to harvest those, of course. But boy, an awful lot of kale, I think, is one of those ones that we can get pretty much to overwinter for us here. There's some overwintering carrots. There's a lot of things that we could really continue to harvest throughout the winter.
Yeah, and another thing that's kind of interesting, some farmers will use low tunnels and for crops like David mentioned, kale, for instance, or turnips, daikon radish, and they'll use either floating row cover or low tunnels, which are a tunnel that's just maybe 28 inches off the ground. It's very low, and that'll hold in some of the heat from the earth during the evening and keep the crops from freezing. But people then will throughout the, you know, into even December, will be little by little harvesting their turnips or their hardy greens, and you can kind of use that as a refrigerator. So the plants really aren't going to be growing because the days are shorter, they don't have the sunlight, and then it's cooler, but you're basically using it as free refrigeration.
513-419-7100 to join us. Let's talk to Sarah. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. So I have a yard with those ornamental bushes that were in like every yard in the 1970s. And these things are like 5.5 feet tall now. And I'm wondering when's a good time to prune them back and how far can I prune them back?
I think you're probably talking about taxus or yews, and that's just a guess. I assume that's what they are. And you can do that in the spring, and you can take them back pretty far, but you're going to have to put up with some ugly-looking shrubs for a while. And you can do that maybe February, March, take those back. And as I said, you can take them back pretty far. I would also fertilize them, and they won't look great for a while until they really get a good flush of growth on them.
Sarah, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. Let's talk to.
One thing I just want to say about the
go right ahead,
about
Peter.
The taxes too is that, you know, I see people go with a hedge clipper and try and shape them, and then all of a sudden you just have a bunch of bare branches. You want to by hand go in and take off a branch back to where a branch forks or to the back, and that's not my area of expertise, but. I do know that you want to take them back little by little.
Yeah, some of the most beautiful taxus in the world are at Spring Grove Cemetery, and they've never had a shear on them ever. They do everything by hand, and you know, I think if you're a taxus pruner at Spring Grove Cemetery, you've got job security because they have a lot of them, and they are gorgeous.
And when we're talking about pruning, you know, it's always very, very helpful to make sure that all your shears and your tools are clean and very sharp because you never want to rip anything, you know, back to a branch, and that could actually cause an entryway for disease and insects.
Is fall a good time to prune roses?
You're getting to the point where, really your roses are going to be spectacular right now. Your Hybrides, Floribundas, and those are going to – this is a time that I think the roses are at their best in bloom. But as soon as they get hit by several frosts, then you're going to want to prune them back to, 18 inches or so. But I usually always, we had a tradition in the Kester family that we always overwintered our roses Thanksgiving weekend. And by then I knew we had enough hard, cold freezes and frost. And that was the weekend that I cut them back to 18 inches and mounded up soil around them.
Let's talk to Marty now. Hi, Marty.
Hello. I have a question about some of my trees around the house. I have a service berry on one end of the house, and I have a crab apple on the other side. And they're just not doing that good. I think they're on their way out. The house is about 17 years old.
So we've had some issues with some service berries as well around our office that are very well established and actually a few areas in town, Alexandria. And so I called our pathologist down at the university in Lexington, and I didn't know if, you know, I went out and I was taking samples, going, you know, and scouting these, and hers too was not looking so well. And, you know, they have a life expectancy about 15-ish years, plus or minus. So, you know, ours was defoliating, and then they were dying back completely. They are a native, so they should be able to withstand, you know, our crazy fluctuation in temperatures. Ours, too, were not, you know, they weren't the fall color. In fact, they started turning fall color in midsummer. So a lot of them we're going to have to take down this fall because they've just reached their max. But I've sent samples down to pathology. There was nothing, you know, in the xylem going on. There was nothing insects or other diseases going on. So, Peter, David, have you seen anything else or no?
Well, crab apples, even our disease-resistant ones this year, because of all the wet weather, had a lot of fungal diseases, apple scab, and you know, just everything got them, and so all of them have really lost a lot of foliage and aren't looking good. I would just, you know, keep those, and hopefully next year we'll have a little bit better year and just watch them. I mean, you know, a tree has got to have foliage on it throughout the season to make the food for subsequent years. So it's when it consistently happens year after year, then the tree starts to go into decline. But this has really been a bad year. This is the first year, so I would just kind of wait on it and see how it comes out next year.
Yeah, and they were sending out suckers a lot, and that's also sometimes can be an indicator that they're a little stressed. They have all this energy, especially in some of the mature plants, and they weren't setting out bud in that new growth, but they were sending out more suckers than normal. So
513-419-7100, and let's talk to Zach. Hi, Zach.
Hi, thank you.
Go right ahead.
My family and I home in southeastern Indiana, and I've been noticing in the front and backyard, it just seems to be infested with these tiny mosquitoes. So I come in and my ankles are just itchy, and I'm curious if there's a good way to treat that.
All the abundant moisture we've had, my back patio is just the same way, and it's really not pleasant to sit out there right now. And there are foggers, there's insecticides. One of the things that we do when it gets a little bit cooler is we have an outdoor fire pit, and the smoke from that just seems to repel them. And there are things that you can do, foggers and things like that, keeping your grass cut, eliminating any sources of standing water. Those are all things that you can try.
What about putting up a bird feeder so that you've got more birds in the yard? I mean, that might be one of
the bat houses.
Martin houses. Martins eat a lot of mosquitoes.
It's always, you know, if you have any containers in your garden, you want to make sure that when you water those, the tray, you don't let it just sit in water. So you want to make sure, because that could be a breeding site, bird baths, any other areas, you know, that may be collecting. I've already put up my little girl's swimming pool. So sometimes when I put it upside down, you know, and the rain is still collecting, well, when we had rain, you know, that I noticed weeks later that it was filled with mosquito larvae. So I had to get rid of that. So just be mindful.
The other thing, too, is I've noticed, I mean, dark places that have a lot of vines and a lot of brush. I mean, at some community gardens I've worked at over the years, there was one in particular on Northside that was really buggy. And I finally talked to everybody to do a big work day, and we took down all these vines and kind of got all this brush along this one fence line. And it was amazing. It was almost instantaneous. I mean, there was a huge decrease in the amount of of mosquitoes. So that's something to kind of watch for, dark, dank places. And it doesn't have to necessarily be standing water, unfortunately. There can be enough water underneath a leaf or a log or a branch.
You're absolutely right. It has been a really tough year for mosquitoes. I mean, we have had, it just seems like quantities. Everywhere we go, it's they're out in abundance.
I guess basically think about airflow and sunlight. Those are the two best things.
Randy sent us an email. He says his yard looks like a minefield because of moles. So he is wondering what is the best way to treat that area. Reseed it?
Well, what I also have noticed the last few days, especially that we've had some warmer weather, has I don't know if you've all seen it, but the grubs, they're like popping out of the grass like it's popcorn. And that has possibly increased the activity of some of the eaters, maybe some groundhogs, anyone else?
Skunks will feed from the top. But yeah, you need to press down those tunnels and make sure that when you're seeding, to get the new seed in honest to goodness contact with soil. If you're just throwing it on top of dead grass or on top of thatch, it has really very little chance. So you need to rake that out a little bit and create some little furrows in there with a hard rake, and then put your seed into those. And of course, cut the grass short before you do that, and then put that down and water frequently.
You know, another little trick that I found that helps with grass seed, as well as when you're spreading broadcasting cover crops, is that you use a leaf rake and turn it upside down and just like tap it on the surface of the soil. And then using a hose, you can water it, but you have to be a spray or kind of a mist fall down, and that'll really kind of secure the seed to the soil.
Yeah, you've got to get it in contact with soil.
So you should add more soil once you stamp the tunnels down? And
either that, or you're going to have to rough it up a little bit. Just, if you're putting seed down, it's not going to hurt it to rough it up a little bit, collect that material that you bring out of there, and then put the seed down.
In some places, like farm stores, you could even rent. They're called power seeders. So you can rent equipment depending upon the size of your yard. And also skunks and things like that, like they're natural aerators. So they're aerating your soil. So they're not bad. They could be a little nuisance, stepping around in your garden. But just step on them, play a little game, just step on them. I don't like to recommend.
You mean the tunnels, right? Not the skunks.
Not the skunks. Yes. Thanks for the clarification. So, yeah. Yeah.
Five, one. Go ahead, Peter.
But he was talking about a minefield. So I'm kind of wondering if it might be skunks as opposed to moles. Because moles usually won't break the ground. It's the tunnels.
That's true.
So if it's like something's like pocked and dug up, it could be a skunk as a possibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
513-419-7100. And let's talk to Sean. Hi, Sean.
Thanks for taking my call. Peter, I think.
Mm-hmm. You wanted to ask Peter a question?
Must have cut out cell phone.
Hello, can you still hear me?
Sure, Sean, go right ahead.
Yes, this was for Peter at the Song Meadow Farm. Are there programs at your location for kids, like around gardening, farming, that kind of thing?
Yes, there is. There's youth programs and arts classes. And if you go to homemeadowsongfarm.com, or else you can do, if you do a search of my name, Peter Huttinger, it'll come up. And Turner Farm also has a summer camp program for youth that's really good.
Yeah, David, what about Boone County?
We don't have anything going on right now, but in the spring we sure will. When I say spring, we're talking, February, March, that early. So there will be quite a few things, and they can check that out on the website.
And Campbell County, Sarah?
Yeah, I know. Crazy, but fall break in Campbell County is quickly approaching. And I know 4-H Youth Development, they do plenty of classes at our office during fall break. And then as far as horticulture, yeah, most of our classes happen this spring and in the summer with children. We have all of our classes online, just like Boone County. We also have Facebook, things like that.
And, you know, we can talk also about taking kids to visit local farms as a way to introduce them to farming.
Oh, yeah.
This is the time of year for it.
This is definitely the time of year for it.
Yeah, Turner Farm has a pumpkin patch days, and a lot of different farms and everything has special fall programming.
Mm-hmm.
Again, 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. And Janelle emailed, she wanted to know if mulching around trees and shrubs in the fall have any bad effects on the nearby soil.
No, it's a good idea. You're going to get leaves falling down, and leaves for the most part should be raked off the grass, but of course never thrown away. They ought to be used as a great resource and composted or put on your garden, but mulching is fine. Just people get really too excited about mulching, and they way overdo it. It really should be no more than 2 inches, and the wider around the trees and shrubs, the better, but no deeper than 2 inches, and never up against the trunk of the plant. And again, wider is better.
Are those leaves that are falling off the trees, right? Are those a good thing to use for mulch?
They can be
mulch
if
and
you,
fertilizer.
If you, mm-hmm. you know, the more... The smaller they are, the more you've shredded them, the quicker they'll break down, but they make a very nice mulch.
Yeah, and if you want to add them to your compost pile and stuff, if you have a bagging lawnmower, you just run over them with a bagging lawnmower, and then that lawnmower chops them up, and then you can have them chopped up and use them as a mulch or add to your compost.
We will continue our conversation. You can join us, 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and joining us to talk about cool weather gardens and answer your gardening questions are Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles, co-owner of Home Meadow Song Farm and director of the Community Garden Program at Turner Farm, Peter Huttinger, and Boone County Cooperative Extension Horticulture Agent David Kester. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We're talking about taking kids to farms, pumpkin patches, that kind of thing to get them interested in gardening and farming. What would you suggest as far as when you take the kids, how do you get them interested? Get them out in the field, get them looking around?
Most of them have petting zoos as well, so... My little girl, she's 2.5. All I have to say is pumpkins. And, you know, and she gets to put on her rain boots because, you know, you never know what she's going to get into. And they usually have all different kinds of activities, maybe a little train ride or a hay ride. And then, you know, of course, apples, cider. A lot of the farms also have farm stands, so you can, in addition to buying, you know, gourds and your pumpkins, you can maybe buy some apple butter or a bushel of apples or, you know, anything like that. So
popcorn.
Yeah. Ornamental corn. So usually you just call in your extension office and get a list. But a lot of them are happening now and definitely every weekend in October.
Yeah, farm or agriculture entertainment has just become huge, and all these farms want you to come out there and spend time, and they have really do a tremendous amount of work to make sure that you have a great time and you spend a little money there and go home with all manner of fall products.
And Turner Farm's pumpkin patch program is nice too because there's draft horses are involved, so the wagons are pulled by teams of draft horses. So that's an added kind of experience for the children. And then when families are there, we also have there's sheep, small dairy. And then there's also a farm store where you can actually buy fall produce.
Yeah, and it's also some of them I've been to actually. They have a little, you know, music series. So some of them will offer that, entertainment, food. I mean, who doesn't love food outside and music and let your kids, you know, go in the corn maze and have fun with other kids, too. So this weekend, they say that it's supposed to be fall-like weather. So yeah. I bet they're all going to be packed.
Fall is my favorite time of year. Pumpkins. I always think of pumpkins in the fall.
It's such a great thing for families to grow, though. I mean, even it's a neat thing that there's so many different things that you can do with them, different sizes, different colors. You can when the pumpkin is fairly small, you can engrave some initials into it, and it'll continue to grow that way with the initials in it. There's just a lot of, and of course, there's books written on how to grow the giant pumpkins. And, you know, I was down at the Kentucky State Fair this year, and I think that pumpkin was close to 1,400 pounds.
Oh, my gosh.
And it came from Indiana, but yeah, it was a huge pumpkin.
Well, the three of you got my wife and I started on our pumpkin patch.
Yeah.
And the thing that my wife said, and I agree with her on this, is that the plant itself is actually beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get those big, huge leaves, yeah, mm-hmm, and the flowers, and they're pretty by themselves. If you don't get any pumpkins like we have, so
they've really spent a lot of time breeding them, and there's now some with just incredible handles on them. You know, the stems are just really solid and beautiful, and of course, there's some of the ones from France that are different colors and pink and white and just all kinds of things. And there's one called One Too Many that looks like bloodshot eyes. That it's really an interesting pumpkin.
Yeah, I should say we do have one little pumpkin starting to grow, but that's been it. I wanted to ask you though about we've noticed a mold on the leaves, mm-hmm, themselves. How do you treat that?
It's mildew, and it really comes in this time of year on squash as well as pumpkins, and it's kind of tough to control. I mean, you can definitely use fungicides on it to control it, but hopefully what you try to do is get the majority of your pumpkin grown and sized up before it becomes an issue. But it can definitely affect yield. And Peter, you probably know more about some of the organic solutions.
I mean, some people use like a milk spray on them, but mm-hmm, powdery mildew often people just have a tendency to ignore because, mm-hmm, it's more aesthetic. But there are some other fungal sort of issues that you may need to use copper on or different things just to kind of read. There's a like a rust color fungi that grows underneath the leaves, and that's more problematic.
And what I like to do, actually, I did it this past Friday, is the leaves that are larger that have the most infestation, I am removing that actually, yep, from the vine, because once it starts raining, all those little spores are just dancing around. So that's one way that I like to control it. And I am spraying with the fungicide, which is a preventative. It's not curing what I see today. It's just preventing further spread. But I like to remove, and that's to go even on my tomatoes, you know, any other crops. I try to remove the areas that are the high infestation areas, and then maybe possibly rely on some chemical control.
Mark, I have some commercial growers, and one of the things that I really stress to them, especially with pumpkins, is rotation is so critical, because if you don't rotate from pumpkin fields from one year to the next and get out of that field for, you know, you cannot grow pumpkins in the same field year after year. You are just waiting for serious problems.
And I think in the past, you probably heard us talk about not overcrowding tomatoes because, again, there can be, you need air and light movement, like I talked about. And the same thing with the pumpkins, because I was growing in a community garden patch, which was, you know, 20 by 30 feet, so that's fairly good size for a community garden, but I was only using a third of that. And so I, at one point, became hedging. Mm-hmm. You know, I just cut off the runners and let the energy go into existing pumpkins. And then, like Sarah said, if something looked bad, I just took a stem all the way back to the vine and cut it off.
Valerie,
got it out of there.
Yeah.
Valerie emailed. She has a sour cherry tree that she says looks like it has brown rot, but she doesn't want to use any kind of a toxic spray on it. And she tried raw milk, and that didn't work. Yeah. So she's wondering if you have any thoughts on something else you could try on that.
Boy.
Black knot?
I don't know. If it's on the foliage at this time of year, you just, you know, you don't do anything because the foliage has already done what it's going to do for the year. But if it occurs early in the spring, then you really do need to do some things. And there are some organic fungicides that you can use. The clay is one that seems to work pretty well on those. If it's black knot, then that's a completely different thing, and that any of the affected stems and limbs should be cut out of there and removed.
Yeah, and that's the thing I was kind of wondering. She's talking about the leaves or the branches, mm-hmm. and then when you do remove diseased branches from a fruit tree, or really anything, you know, bag them up and send them to the landfill, or if you're in a situation where you can burn them, burn them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and if you're also if you have a lot of bacterial activity on the leaves when it falls in the fall, that might be a situation where you want to rake them up and bag them, and get rid of them and go to a composting operation that gets the stuff hot enough to kill that bacteria.
513-419-7100. Let's talk to Robert. Hi, Robert.
Hi, hello. How are you?
Great, thank you. Go right ahead.
Yes, we have a pawpaw tree in our front yard. It was planted maybe 3 months ago. It's a small tree. It's maybe 3 feet high, maybe a foot and a half across. And for the last, it started maybe 6 weeks ago. The leaves started turning yellow maybe a month ago. From the bottom up, and now only the top leaves are green. And I've asked a couple people what's going on, and I got too much water, then I got not enough water, then I got, well, it's fall, you know. And then I looked up on the internet and found all kinds of crazy stuff.
Yeah.
So I was wondering what you might want to venture.
Well, first of all, congratulations on planting a pawpaw tree. That's great. It's a neat tree. I think what you've got is a root system that hasn't caught up yet, and it could be too much water, it could be too little water, but I think it's because you just put it in and the root system hasn't gotten well established yet, and I think if it just let it go into fall or winter with the ample supply of moisture in the root zone, and I think it'll leaf out and be a productive tree.
And we're very fortunate in this area. The national researchers of pawpaws is Kentucky State University, and they are in Frankfort, Kentucky. And so if you just Google Kentucky State University pawpaws, you'll get tons of information. And I actually just had a class on pawpaws, and one of the specialists, she always recommends the first 2 years a little bit more shade, which sometimes, how can you do that? But just as David said, it's root development. You're not going to have any fruit for a while. Avoid any type of fertilization at this time, and just making sure that you don't overwater because, they don't like that either. But it seems like you have, you're on the good track there. But look at Kentucky State University, and they have amazing guides. And if you want to add more to your pawpaws, because you will have to add some more pawpaws to your little orchard there if you want fruit development, because they need to cross-pollinize.
And I think this is a good time of year to plant fruit trees in general, whether they're European cultivars or the pawpaws or different natives. Because then they have moisture during the winter while they're dormant, and then the spring is moist. And so, this when you plant things in the midsummer or even early spring, as you move into June and July, sometimes it's hard to keep up with watering. This gives them kind of a head start. But like Sarah said, you need to get a couple more in there from a different breeding stock in order to get them to produce fruit. And be patient. It took ours at home 6 years.
But worth it.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk to Zach now. Hi, Zach.
Hey, how are y'all doing?
Good, thank you.
All right. Well, I know y'all are stuck in the studio right now, but I hope y'all at some point get outside to enjoy this off day. So my question is about asparagus beetles and their larvae. So this is our fifth year that we've had Jersey Giant asparagus, and we've kind of had a two-approach attack where we hand-pick off the beetles and kind of throw them in a mason jar full of soapy water. We also spray with like a Thursite BT solution to try to, kill the larvae, but I know they have to ingest it so it disrupts their GI tract or whatever. It just doesn't seem to be doing the trick. And now maybe, if I hadn't sprayed, they would have just completely taken over. So maybe it is helping, but I just want to know if there's any other kind of natural type solution that you have to to get these things off of the asparagus plants.
Neem, Peter?
I was thinking neem, but they're beetles, so the BT's really not going to help. Yeah, that's for like cabbage loopers.
Right.
True caterpillars, the BT caterpillars. Works.
Yeah, so that's just a waste. I mean, it didn't hurt the plant.
Yeah.
But, you know, hand removing and then also neem oil, pyrethium. You know, if you go look through some of the organic sprays, we're not supposed to give brand names, but if there's a OMRI logo mm-hmm. on it, that's an independent third-party certification for organic. It's anything with OMRI, O-M-R-I, written on the label is okay for use with certified organic. So that's a good way to go.
And I'm not sure where the larvae overwinter. Is it the beetle? So am I clear to say that they overwinter under the soil? So is that right, David and
I
Peter?
Think so, yeah.
I think that might be it.
I'm not familiar.
There might be a remedy to do something, apply to the soil. So maybe my email's on the website. So get back in touch with me and we'll look into that.
The one thing about them too is I've had them and they can be devastating. They can, but it doesn't seem to happen year after year after year. It seems like you'll have a really bad year for them and then you won't see them again for a good while. So hopefully, you know, this has been your toughest year and things will improve. But I think I would really try neem and pyrethrum.
Let's talk to Jessica. Hi, Jessica.
Hi. I'm looking for a tree recommendation. We've just pulled out a plum that was infected with black knot, and I think we're looking for the Holy Grail. So we want something that will give as much shade as possible. We have about a 20-foot radius to work with. We'd like some spectacular fall color. We'd love to cover a second-story window as quickly as possible. And we don't really like a typical maple. We want something a little more unique. So we've looked at ginkgos, and we love them, but they're slow growing. And we are wondering if you have any recommendations.
Well, on a quick grower, no. Unfortunately, if you're thinking quick grower, that tends to be something that's not long-lived. So by far my favorite is a ginkgo. I have a necklace I wear every day around my neck. Even some of the maples are – I mean, I don't know what your time frame is, but – 20 years, 15, 20 years. I mean,
I like black gum. That's a native nice, really good fall color. Should be pretty much available in the nurseries right now. I know there's that those should be available, and I think that's a real good tree.
Beeches. I love beeches.
20 foot, that's kind of, well, that's.
She wants a quick grower.
Yeah, that's beech is just notoriously slow.
Yeah,
and
huge.
Yeah,
well,
and huge.
I want to try to get one more phone call in here too. Let's see if we can get Kathy in here. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Like to know what I could add to my arsenal. It seems like I'm at war with stink bugs right now. They seem to be much bigger this year than even last year, and aside from the nearby flip-flop and a box of tissues, I don't know what I have else to fight them off.
Any suggestions?
No. This is their time of year. Now they invade our homes or garages or things like that, and they overwinter as adults. So they're not mating. They're not laying eggs in our home. They're just overwintering. They like to be in corners or undisturbed areas. Honestly, I let them, if they come in, I don't want to squish them because for those who haven't, they smell, some say they smell like cilantro, and people, some like it, some don't, and they can stain. So if they're on curtains or on walls, they can leave a stain and the residue. So vacuum is my favorite remedy.
Yeah, put me in the I don't like the smell category.
Yeah.
Well, Sarah, Peter, and David, thank you so much for joining us today.
Good to be here.
Thanks. Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles, co-owner of Home Meadow Song Farm and director of the Community Garden Program at Turner Farm, Peter Huttinger, and Boone County Cooperative Extension Horticulture Agent David Kester.